Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So it's time for the Friday gathering now. This week we have Fine Gael TD for Dublin Rathdown and Minister of State at the Department of Finance, Neil Richmond. We've Social Democrat TD for Wicklow and spokesperson on climate, environment and biodiversity, Jennifer Whitmore. Political editor with the journal.ie, Christina Finn, and special correspondent at the Irish Examiner, Mick Clifford. And you're all very welcome. Jennifer, in particular, it's great to see you looking so well, because people might know you were very ill earlier in the summer, weren't you?
I was, yeah. I had at the start of the summer, I had what was known as a spontaneous spleen rupture, which essentially took me out of action for quite a while. Mm-hmm. But everything is fine now, and I'm back on track. And I had incredible care from St Vincent's Hospital, and from the community as well, actually. So I want to thank everyone for that.
It's great to see you back.
It was one of those things that just shakes you, and you realise how important your family and your support structures are.
But you have to mind yourself as well.
And you have to mind yourself
going into the busy autumn term. Listen, I'm going to start with the immigration figures that we had from the CSO this week. Christina, you might start us on this, because the headline was the highest immigration, so people coming into Ireland, since 2007. But then we also saw on the other side of that, maybe there's been less talk about this, the highest emigration, people leaving Ireland, since 2015. So you've been taking a look into that side of it.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, as you said, the headline figure was, you know, immigration, that's been a talking point for a very long time now, over the last number of months. But on the flip side there, we're talking about, I think it's 69,000 people have moved out of the state in 12 months to April this year, compared to 64,000 in 2023. So that's the highest emigration figure since 2015, with the 126 increase, particularly in the number of people leaving for Australia. So for me, that sort of set alarm bells off in terms of a politics side of things, because I suppose the narrative from the government is, you know, Ireland is, you know, we're extremely strong economically. You know, everyone who wants a job can have a job, full in employment. But something does seem to be amiss there. And I think there's a combination, definitely. I suspect some of the government narrative coming from this will be pent-up demand from COVID, that there'll be a group of younger people that couldn't travel that perhaps are looking to go to places like Australia. So we're seeing built up numbers there, and that perhaps could be an element of it. But I think you can't turn away from the aspect of cost of living, of housing. And for me, I think renting as well is something that, you know, we hear a lot about home ownership, first time buyers. I really think the renting aspect.
So you're working to pay the rent.
Yeah. And I really think that has been a big issue that is not being dealt with, particularly for young people, because, you know, in Dublin in particular, the rents are continuing to go higher and higher despite the RPZs. Yes, you have the rent credit. It's not really making a dent in people's way of life. And then on the flip side of that, you know, you're dealing with the aftermath of that, be it the teachers that can't live here in Dublin that want to work in those schools, nurses, doctors and all the rest. But these, you know, beg bigger questions about whether you're going to start supplementing people to live in Dublin city centre.
And other cities as well.
Yeah, and I think,
you know, with the teaching crisis is fairly widespread.
And to be honest,
isn't it?
I think that the 750 idea floated by Minister Peter Burke, I was speaking to a few people yesterday, just, you know, in their 20s. Fortunately, I'm not there anymore. But I was like, you know, what was the you know, the feeling among people in their 20s of that idea being floated? And to be honest, it was scoffed at.
Didn't cut it. So, Neil Richmond, that would seem to suggest that the social contract is broken for those younger people.
Well, firstly, before I get into that, before I have an argument with Jennifer, can I also share that it's brilliant to see her back, genuinely.
Great, yeah.
And it's something in political debate, we're great at having arguments with each other, but we all do get on. I think we need to say that importantly in politics. So it
do
is
have
great.
That, that's recorded.
Now that's recorded. Yeah. You can start arguing
can that.
Now.
Absolutely. But before we disagree with each other, just a couple of things I would add to Christine's point that you didn't mention, that you also, the visa entitlements to Australia have changed. So it used to be everyone under 30, now it's under 35. So the eligibility for going to Australia is a lot. It isn't all just about cost of living, because we see the cost of rent in Australia proportionately is higher. In cities like Perth, Melbourne, Sydney, we see the cost of living. And if you turn on Australian news or follow Australian social media, the issues that we're about to debate about, which are live issues, I'm not denying that there isn't issues, they're actually exasperated. So I think there's a bit more to that. We also see in the figures 30,000 Irish people came home last year, which is significant. So when I emigrated in 2005, my late mother burst out in tears at the airport because she thought it was just like her brother 50 years previously. I'd never come home. I was back in 2 years. People are going, and I'm not dismissing it. Some of it is, they just feel
some
like
some people
they
are making a choice. They're saying, right, okay, the rents are high there, but my salary is going to reflect that and the quality of my life is going to be better there than it is here. That's a sad indictment of what is on offer in Ireland, is it not?
Well, that's not factually correct, because when you look at the Australian economy, you look at the levels of salary and you do the conversion from Australian dollars to euro, the cost of living issue is actually worse than it is in here in Ireland. Yes,
so people are going
for
but they're going for the sun and they're going to be poorer. Is that what you're
trying for the experience? Like, in fairness, if you're in a peer group of 10 people and you get to the stage where maybe you finished college, maybe you've done your qualifications, or you just go like, you know, maybe I fancy 2 or 3 years in Australia. Oh, my other friends are going. But I don't think we should get into this self-fulfilling narrative that Australia is so much better than Ireland, when we do have a considerable amount of Irish people coming back from Australia where they just didn't come back before. We do have challenges.
And yeah, we do actually have challenges. I think it says 6,400 people made the move home in the 12-month period from Australia, but that is down 17% from the year previous. So yes, people did return, go there, get their experience and come back. But what we're seeing now is that there's a drop in the people that are making that choice to come back, and there must be reasons behind that.
Well, year on year figure, there's a drop, but proportionately, we are seeing considerable amount of, and we also see the people who are leaving Ireland. It's not just Australia. There's considerable amount of Ukrainians have left Ireland, considerable amount of people from the UK, over 5,000 have moved back, and the EU as well. But I suppose to your point, crucially, about the social contract, Claire, we do absolutely owe that generation that's been caught, the generation that came through COVID in their younger years, that are finding themselves in a good job, a really good job. They have the option to go into good job, good salary, but it is a slog. I know it's a slog. I talk to these people every day, just like Jennifer does. And that's why when we talk about what's going to solve this, it's making sure that we are accelerating building new homes. 240 people every week are buying their first home. We need to increase that. We are increasing that. We'll see commencement figures yesterday show well over 30,000 homes started to be built in the first 7 months of the year. We have to do more of that. But equally, it comes with the infrastructure as well, because a lot of things are going right in this country. We have huge challenges, but we're in the best possible position to face those challenges where previously we simply weren't.
Okay. Jennifer, what have you to say to those figures that Christina has presented to us there? Like, do you think people are making a choice to go because it's just too hard to work and live in Ireland and have a life outside of that work?
I think that's absolutely the case. And I think if you're to talk to any young person, that's what they'll tell you. I think young people in Ireland, it's like their lives are stalled. You know, they can't move out of home. They can't become independent young adults because there isn't the opportunities for them to rent or to buy. And, you know, the jobs are there, but there is nowhere for them to live. I mean, I had a chat with my 17-year-old son recently, and I sort of said, you know, they had the mammy son chat where I was like, where can you see yourself in 5 years' time? And he went, well, you know, I'll be in Australia. And I went, really? And he went, yeah, sure. I can't afford to live here, ma'am. So this is a 17-year-old who's talking about that now and where he's going to be. You know, he was born over there because myself and my husband were there for 10 years. So I know that actually whilst things in Australia are, you know, housing is expensive, things like that, but actually the standard of living there is way, way higher than it is here. And I think that's the reality. And I think a lot of young people see, well, we can't afford to rent here. We're not going to be able to afford our own home. Let's go and try Australia out because, you know, their friends are there and they can see this other life, this potential that could be there for them. And I think it's a sort of sad indictment of us as a country that we're again sort of forcing our young people overseas and can't look after them here.
But a lot of them, like yourself, they will come back, you know? And a lot of people will go because their friends are going, but they'll only go for a year or two and then they'll come back to Ireland.
But there's also a lot that don't come back. So a huge, like when I was out there, there was a huge gang of Irish people out there. A lot of them have never come back. And I think what we need is to make sure that if people have gone overseas, that they do have the conditions that they can come back. You know, they can go get those experiences, get the job opportunities, but actually still be able to come home to their family support networks. And that's really important.
Mick, what's your take on this?
Well, first of all, people have always gone. I went myself more than 30 years ago and people go, the issue is not the going, the issue is whether or not they come back. Traditionally, a small number perhaps didn't come back. I get the impression that that is rising now, that there are more who don't come back for the very simple reason of the cost of housing in particular here. And if you look at the immigration and emigration figures that came out, to me in some ways they reflect the trajectory of the country since 2010, 2011. And you can go all the way back to Enda Kenny's Action Plan for Jobs, which by any standards was highly successful. The problem was the emphasis on the economy. It was not kept pace with the requirement for services, principally housing, to go along with it. To the point that I think last year there was about 50,000 jobs here filled from people coming into the country. And yet we had an increase in people going out of the country. Those coming in, they're skilled, they're probably older, they can come in and take up these jobs. Those leaving are younger. As Christina said, a lot of them are seeing that they don't have the prospect of having a proper standard of living here, being in a position to buy a house. And that is the anomaly, I think, that's in the economy at the moment. It's largely centred on the housing crisis, but it extends to other elements of the cost of living. And you have a generational issue there. There's absolutely no question about it.
And then a lot was made, of course, of the immigration figures, the number of people coming in at the highest level since 2007. But the bald fact is, we need those people, don't we? We
50,000 jobs last year
fuel the economy.
By people coming in. Yeah.
The problem is that we don't have enough accommodation for them.
Yeah, and that's the perennial challenge. But I think it is important when we dig into figures, those leaving, half of those weren't Irish citizens. That is important to say. So some of those are people going home, parts in Eastern Europe, the UK, the rest of the EU. And it's important to say that because it's not all one-way traffic. But yes, absolutely, as Minister for Employment Affairs, I issued 31,000 work permits to people from outside the EU who are coming to fill key jobs. The challenge is, and it is a challenge we're trying our best to meet, and the figures will show that there's been a huge uptake in terms of building the homes. Homes of all types. Homes that you can rent, homes that you can buy, homes that you can buy affordably. And we see more and more people able to buy homes. But absolutely, we need to step it up. We'll have new housing figures imminently. We'll build over 40,000 homes this year, and we'll build more again this year.
Christina,
we're not ignorant to this. We're not pretending like it's not an issue.
The problem politically, I think, for government parties here is that when you look at the breakdown of accommodation status of, you know, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil supporters, Sinn Féin supporters, predominantly people that are Sinn Féin supporters are in rented accommodation privately, or be it state-owned rented accommodation. And Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have a big bulk of people that own their own homes or are mortgage holders. So if you're talking about younger people, they're not on the property ladder, they're renting. You know, is the onus there that, and the urgency that they want to give them a dig out, is that there, or is that the base of their vote? But the issue here
is the mortgage holders and homeowners have
parents.
Children who can't
this
move out.
This is the point, that the parents aren't too well pleased to be waving off their young people off to far flung places like Australia. And I think that's where the government parties will have a headache with this one.
Okay, that's absolutely true, because when we were canvassing for the local elections, the amount of parents that you would meet and talk to on the doors, that they are secure in their homes, but they are so worried about their children and where their children are going to live and whether they're going to be forced out of the county or out of the country, but away from those family support networks. And that was their key focus as well.
John Fitzgerald had a very interesting take this morning when he suggested, you know, is it open, or should it be considered whether the economy should be slowed down on the basis that we've less people coming in here, and because we've less housing, what have you. Now, you're to go down that route, you're talking about a restrictive budget rather than an expansionary one. You're talking about not giving out the goodies and all that. So, you know, arguably you have the economic versus the political there, and because we're coming into an election, it's undoubtedly the political
just
that will
succeed. The economic. Our economy is slowing down. We've gone from 8.9, 9.8 GDP% growth coming out of COVID to 2.1, 2.2% this year. There is a natural element. There was an unleashed post-COVID, a lot of trade, a lot of opportunities. It's now our responsibility, thanks to the record income tax, corporation tax, VAT intake this year, to drive that into the social and physical infrastructure, which you can't deny that we're not building more houses. More people aren't buying their new home, first-time buyers, now compared to 5-10 years ago. I'm not saying that there isn't an awful lot more to do, but there has been a step change in terms of the development of new houses, but also the extra facilities in schools. And Jennifer, you and I have debated this multiple times in the Dáil, in North Wicklow and South Dublin, but we see classroom that I just left this morning, 8 new classrooms over the summer. Another school has
moved
into. Have
they teachers in them?
They do have teachers in them. You know, and it was hard work, but they do have teachers.
People have experience, and you brought me on to education. I'm glad about that, because we've had the CAO offers, and we've had that proposal to ban mobile phones at second level, but also people who cannot get a place in secondary school, schools who cannot get teachers starting off the new school year. It's a really stressful time. I know, Jennifer, you were trying to get places for people, because where you are in Greystones, it's a real challenge.
Oh, it's been an absolute nightmare for parents and for the students and for the schools as well. You know, last October it was highlighted to us that there was going to be a huge deficit on the number of places for children going into secondary school this September. And I've been pushing and trying to raise it with the department and the minister for the year. Eventually, there was additional 70 places were created, but it took an awful lot of pressure to get that done. It should have been something that proactively was done. It shouldn't have taken politicians and parents fighting for it.
Did you have people coming to you this week saying they couldn't get into
schools? So there are, just a week before the secondary schools were to go back, there was 7 children who still didn't have any place at all available to them. So we eventually got those. One of the schools stepped up and took those children in. This week I have a number of primary school children that do not have places. And a lot of the time it's actually, interesting enough, it's people who are returning from being overseas. They're returned back to their hometown and they're like, okay, my children need school places now and there is nowhere for them to go. Mm-hmm. So we don't have the infrastructure that's keeping pace with population growth. Like the ability to plan and deliver is just not there. And it's parents and children that are suffering because of it. We also, in relation to education, the other thing I'm dealing with at the moment in Wicklow, and I know it's happening across the country because I'm receiving emails from other parents as well, is the school transport system. There's hundreds of children in Wicklow
we discussed
that don't have buses.
Yeah, on the programme here.
They didn't show up this week.
People not getting those concessionary tickets, so they might be...
No, not even concessionary. So these are ones
who are qualified,
but there's I think 10 or 11 bus routes that do not have buses on them because there's no bus drivers.
Yeah.
And this, we had this last year as well. So this is the frustrating thing, is that it happens every single year, and every single year parents and schools have to break their hearts trying to shout and force and push for things to be delivered, and eventually it happens maybe 6 months later and then it starts again. But and it's so frustrating.
It comes back to your point, the economy may be going gangbusters but the services infrastructure just not keeping pace.
Absolutely, and as I said, housing is central to that, but it is right across all services, and that's creating widening gaps in society. I mean, those who are older, those who are in better paid jobs, those who've had their houses longer are doing pretty all right. They're doing relatively well within the economy, even those who are not working in the more lucrative FDI sector. Those who are younger, employment tends to be more precarious. Those who are less well off are more dependent on services. So you have those gaps opening up. And even in relation to the housing, I mean, affordability is what it comes back to time and time again. And there's a big issue there that nobody wants to even look at. And that is, should the price of houses come down? And there is nowhere that the government will go near that on the basis of the volume of people who actually own houses. So how do you address affordability? I know Neil makes a point about building more houses. Absolutely, no question. But that of itself, the construction industry, as far as I can see, is operating at capacity at the moment. There are still big log jams in the planning system. The number of houses that are required, we're not getting anywhere near it. And every forecast of the number of houses that are required, there's no way in the world at the current capacity that we're ever going to get near that either.
Mm-hmm. Neil,
it's key just when you talk about affordability. Last year saw the development of the most amount of social houses since 1975. This year we'll see more affordable houses delivered since the Celtic Tiger. It's not like the progress isn't being made there. Would I wish it was faster? Absolutely. But it's all about putting in place the economic and financial resources. And it's important to go back to school buses. School buses weren't free 3 or 4 years ago. This is the change. There's more people taking it. This impacts, I was dealing with cases yesterday just to get the school up the road on the N11 at Gaelcloister. But like that, the place is, it's taking time, it's teething, it's working through. But these are people who wouldn't have had those buses a couple of years ago. So it's good that they're getting buses. The system obviously is working at contents. And in relation to school building projects, I'll be a bit guilty. My wife went back to full-time teaching yesterday after 6 years out. Everyone's going back. We are seeing developments, of course. We need to do it quicker.
There's a big problem in the urban centres because teachers can't afford to live in those places. You know, in Limerick, in Cork, in Galway and in Dublin, where they're short of teachers, they can't recruit because they can't pay the rent.
And there's two parts to that. First of all, when we talk about school places, the class sizes have been brought down exponentially over the last couple of years. So do we want the quick solution that will go for 28 kids in every, or 35 kids in every national school? Or do you want to keep the aim that we're filling the places in relation to affordability for teachers? I agree.
But
it's a pinch point. There's two issues that are really key there.
Like places like London and all.
Yeah.
Like
it's just a Dublin waiting for the teachers.
The government won't touch that issue with a barge pole because it's opening it up to other sectors like nurses and all. But like the nettle has to be grasped at some point.
The subvention is one solution and it does work very successfully in London for teachers. But London is a bit of a hard comparison to Ireland. You know, 16 million people all in. the vast majority, I'm in Kiltearn, and the vast majority of people teaching at school are actually probably living in Jennifer's constituency. They're commuting up. It's only a 20-minute commute, or they have Lewis or bus access within. So it is an option for a lot of people. But there's two other things. Teacher salaries will have gone up by 10% over the last 2 years due to the public service pay agreement. That's important. Secondly, it goes back to Mick's point, and he's dead on. I won't disagree with him. It's rapidly increasing, which we are doing, the supply of housing of all types, affordable, social, cost rent.
What about the other point that Mick makes? The politicians do not want to touch house prices coming down, because your voters want to keep house prices as high as they can be, because that's their asset.
Well, but is the solution to that to cap and tell people what their house is worth by a state intervention? Or is it actually to build more houses and then the market evens out? We want houses to be affordable. As I said, there's hundreds of people every week buying a home that weren't previously. That's why we have the first time buyers grant that other parties would look to scrap. It's all about delivery of large scale supply, including affordable housing as set by the government. And we go down the road to Shangana, there'll be 400 affordable homes opening very soon.
How much are they going to cost?
Well, the average price for an affordable house is €270,000. We all know that. We've all debated that repeatedly in the Dáil. But affordable to one person is not affordable to the other, or is doubly affordable for someone else. It's all about scale. It's the real focus on social, on affordable, on private and cost rental. And we have no problem. We do want people to be able to afford their own home. And that's what we're working
on. OK, listen, before we finish, we have a few minutes left. Mick, I'll come to you on this. We had that row, which seems to have been resolved over the residential zoned land tax between Fianna Fáil and the Greens in the main. Do you think, though, that the coalition partners now have an eye on voters, on who they can win over, rather than what was happening in the lifetime of this government, was cohesion between the coalition partners?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, everyone's in campaign mode, and there is nothing sticky, nothing difficult, nothing contentious that will be going through the Dáil or that will be put to the people between now and the general election. Approximately on, people reckon, the 15th of November, but we'll wait and see that one. But completely, Simon Harris, he was, you know, some people suggested he was handed a hospital pass. He was given the leadership in the year of an election. He has been all over the world. He's been around the world in 80 days, 80 times since then, and he's showing fantastic energy in that. We haven't a clue what kind of Taoiseach he is or would be, because he has been campaigning since he got in there, and we won't know until or if he becomes one after the next election. So from here on in, very little that is anything contentious will be done. The business over the land rezoning tax, I remember I was listening to Oisin Smith here, Clare and Europe. I was taken aback at how emphatic he was, but he knew as well. He knew there was no way in the world Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were going to go to the country breaking up the government on that issue, effectively standing up for developers. And that was just one indication of where it was. And it turned out he was right. There won't be anything more contentious, I'd suggest. It'll be all sweetness and light all the way now.
I'm just intrigued by what is going to prompt them to go to the country. You know, having made so many promises that the election won't be until next year, what are they going to say?
That'll be very easy. That'll be very easy.
But once the budget is done, we're finished now with everything ticked.
We realise now that we need a mandate or what have you. And do you know something? To be fair, there won't be any backlash from the electorate for it either, I wouldn't suggest.
Neil, he's written the script for you there now.
Yeah. It seems that everyone's written the script except the person that matters, and that's the Taoiseach. Look, this government has been in office for over 4.5 years. Faced global crises like the COVID pandemic, the war in Ukraine, and we've stuck together, three very different parties. And I certainly will be seeking re-election in Dublin Rathdown, hoping people will continue their preferences without any pact to my Fianna Fáil colleagues.
Have you the posters done?
No, I haven't been selected to run again. 19th of September.
I'm sure you have the pictures done. Have you booked the photographer? Jennifer, have you?
I have.
Yeah, you see?
I haven't been selected yet, but I did it on the base. But no, and actually my posters have been sitting in the garden since the last election. So
right.
I'll be
ready to go. That's the sensible option. Listen, thank you all so much for coming in. Christina, Jennifer, Neil and Mick.